Hey everyone, welcome to Office Hours with Cloud Posse. This is our Christmas edition. We have a light attendance here, so I'm just going to keep this brief. It is December 25th, 2024. I'm your host, Eric Osterman. Real quick, I'm the founder of Cloud Posse. We're a DevOps accelerator for AWS infrastructure that helps teams deploy their software faster. So if you or your team has been banging your head against the wall with underperforming infrastructure, why don't you just head over to cloudposse.com/meet. Again, cloudposse.com/meet. Book a meeting with me directly, and we'll show you how things get done. All right. So, maximizing today's session, our format's informal. Ask as many questions as you'd like, especially on our open source tools like Atmos. And for those on the recording, we host these calls live. Join us by going to cloudposse.com/office hours. Again, cloudposse.com/office hours. We'll be posting a recording of this session to our YouTube channel. Just keep an eye out. Go to youtube.com/cloudposse. Again, youtube.com/cloudposse. And we'll post a video there in a couple of hours. So with that said, let's just I realized I was on the wrong slide there. So yeah, that's us here, and that's us now. So let's jump into some quick announcements here and then Q&A. So I thought this first one was pretty neat, Venkat. It was via Anton Babenko's newsletter. So it's just a dashboard to help you visualize your projects, workspaces, and everything surrounding Terraform. And I believe it's also open source, if I got it right. Yeah, open source Terraform dashboard. So yeah, there are a lot of these
Does it
coming out. What was
is
that?
this for Terraform Cloud, or is this what's it tie
No.
into?
Oh, interesting here, dashboard, but
Oh, it is integration to Terraform Cloud and a custom provider, if you look at the top right.
interesting. Powered by a Terraform Cloud API. Got it. Okay. Interesting. That makes more sense then. So how projects are defined and everything. Kind of ironic, a dashboard for a dashboard, if you will, or a re-implementation of it. Okay.
Yeah, I guess it's for the people who can't switch over to OpenTofu or the other providers and want something nicer.
Well, this is Terraform. Oh, wait. Did I totally understand?
Yeah, I think it's for Terraform Cloud.
Direct. Yeah, but therefore I didn't get the link to OpenTofu. I don't believe this is a re-implementation of it. I think this is using Terraform Cloud's APIs versus implementing Terraform Cloud APIs.
Oh, yes. No, I agree. I'm thinking it's because with Spacelift and stuff, you get a pretty good, you get like a better offering on some of the OpenTofu based the tacos providers for OpenTofu. I'm assuming
Yeah.
they made this to kind of fill the shortcomings of Terraform Cloud, but might be making too many assumptions on my end.
I don't know.
Like you can't use this with Spacelift, right? It's only Terraform Cloud
Oh,
specific.
exactly. So you have to already use or subscribe to Terraform Cloud. And I guess it's adding some things on top of it maybe that you don't get. I thought Terraform Cloud also had cost management, for example, though. So I'm a
I
little
think it's
confused.
all there, but I don't think it's it's definitely not an experience like that, but I might be mistaken. We migrated off Terraform Cloud about 8 months ago. So I'm not sure if they've made any great enhancements in that since then.
What are you using now? Open or Spacelift?
We took an approach similar to Atmos.
Okay.
Yeah, basically just GitHub Actions based. But we've anyone that we're working with, we're basically pushing towards a Spacelift or even just bringing up Atmos as an option. But I think ourselves will eventually migrate to Atmos.
I hope so. Been working on you for 5 years or 4 years, and we know.
Yeah, there's some regret in building what we've built, but it is one of those things where it's kind of working.
Yeah, there's some good stuff coming to Atmos too. I'm really excited about, but I messed up. Okay, there we go. Well, I'm going to go a little bit out of order because I think this was a nice transition from the other Terraform topic. I saw this Pipeform. It was trending on Reddit. They do a little animated GIF here. Wait for it a second. So, what it does, we've seen a million of these different things that format the Terraform output, but this, I think, raises the bar for console usage of Terraform. I think this is what I'd like to see. Pretty cool. So, my biggest complaint about this is that they implemented everything in internal, so it can't be used as a mod go mod. I believe internal doesn't allow that.
That's pretty cool. I wonder if it supports OpenTofu. I always have to ask every time I see Terraform.
JSON output and the JSON output structure hasn't changed in a material way between VSL Terraform and MPL Terraform, aka OpenTofu.
Okay, cool.
So it should be. And then this was interesting. I thought, for a while there, I thought Cloud Posse might do something similar to this, but we haven't really found a need for it, so it never came about. Our utils provider was this in a nutshell. But here's another person that came out with what they're calling their core functions provider, and it adds a bunch of utility functions to Terraform that you might think should just be in the STL, so standard library, if you will, of Terraform. Since new versions of Terraform support functions as opposed to like data sources, and these therefore can now be used just function. If you use this, these can just be called as functions within your HCL code. And I believe they show an example here. No, they don't actually. Maybe if I click on one of these. Yeah, here. Here's an example of how to call them, just like in C++. All right. Next announcement is. Free version of GitHub Copilot. Or in other words, users who are not paying for Copilot now get some limited access to Copilot. I don't know what the limitations are, though. We pay for it, so. Yeah. Pretty good. And then,
Oh, one quick thing on the free tier or even the cheaper tier of Copilot. So I'm not sure how you've set up your org, but if a user is part of your organization is paying for Copilot personally, then they'll be able to use it against whatever repos or whatever they have in your organization in VS Code. If you give them a business license, it'll override their personal tier. So then now they have like a business tier. And when I was looking into it, end up having to use the business license for anyone that was using personal on our team, because with the business license, you could set up I think some it's like filters to basically exclude files like .envs and everything like that. And you also get the there's like some IP protections on business and above. Whereas if you have a team member that's using personal, then that creates some issues, obviously. So you may want to, and then you could also set up these filters in case you're not familiar with the Eric across the org, where you can do .env files or whatever, like wildcard. It's similar to a gitignore or a codeunders file. Just throw in all the paths that you want to ignore, the file names that you want to ignore.
So then I was looking into this the other day because one of our enterprise customers I thought was saying they were doing something that sounded really what I wanted with Copilot. So one of the nice things with Cursor, for example, is how it's aware of your entire code base and can suggest where to make changes in the code base, not just like with blinders on in the current file or what you select. That's how Copilot works, right? You have to either select the text for it to be able to really comment on things.
When's the last time you used Copilot?
Well, I use it every single day, but I haven't messed with any of the settings. I haven't seen it no be aware of the code base. Is it doing that now?
I've been able to attach the code base, like using the attachment icon, and it just
I haven't
basically
tried.
sends it to a workspace.
Oh, okay. I haven't
But then
tried.
that's where you have to be careful about your .env files. If you've got those, then you
Those
want to
are.
make sure you have it excluded, and the only way to exclude them is on a business tier or enterprise tier. Business at the minimum. Yeah. And then one other thing that just came to mind, I was trying to mention earlier, is if you want to block off personal access to avoid issues with people on your team or company using Copilot, you'll want to basically set up a firewall rule that blocks DNS entries to the personal GitHub Copilot endpoint. That's their recommended approach in the docs. So you basically don't allow DNS resolution to one particular host name that is representative of all of Copilot personal. And then for the business tier and enterprise, you get a different endpoint. So it kind of sucks. There's no other way to disable it beyond blocking it or
But how are we able to enforce a firewall without having control over the workstation or things like that?
That's where you need control of the workstation. So in our case, we're using GitHub like Codespaces. We're self-hosting that now. And so we do have a fair amount of control there. We're also using Tailscale. We haven't rolled out such a policy yet, but we'll probably implement that. I think Tailscale will allow us to do that, but I haven't checked those settings yet.
You're self-hosting VS Code Spaces? How
Yeah,
evaluate
happy
other
to.
options for that, like Coder? I'm just curious.
Oh, yeah, totally. So all of it's public, so I can link you to our repos as well. We were using, I guess to give a bit of backstory, we were using GitHub Codespaces. It worked pretty well until it didn't, meaning there's a GitHub outage, and then you're just down and you can't do anything for a couple hours. And so we looked at the tool chain, looked at Coder and a few other things. It turned out Code CLI offered the capability to run a self-hosted Codespace very easily. And so we took that Code CLI, injected it into a Docker container, ran it from Docker container, and we basically set up a bit of a system. Happy to give you a demo offline about this, where we can get the same experience that we have with GitHub Codespaces, except it actually uses dev tunnels from Azure underneath. So the whole infrastructure is all basically free, up to
Google's
like,
MacBook Pro disconnected.
sorry, it's all pretty much free, but we do pay for the underlying compute. So we're able to use EC2, we're able to use Hetzer. We could run off our local machine if we wanted to, if we had Docker installed. The requirements are pretty lightweight, and we've got a pretty simple bootstrap script for that. And then more recently, we've started leveraging DevBox for whatever that's worth. And that's been like the perfect combination of being able to spin up environments like fully, like no more cloning code to local machines. We could do this all in the cloud and scale up and scale down for our development needs. So if we need 64 gigs of RAM to run the whole stack, we have that. And if we just need 2 gigs, which we usually do 90% of the time, we just do that all day, every day. And then our underlying host VM, we're just running Debian. So pretty much on any cloud, I've done this across multiple clouds. We have like a bootstrap script, but we also set up automation to mimic the Codespaces experience where rather than having to log in, we have like a whole Slack bot that we created. I'll have to give you a demo if you have time. But yeah.
Very cool. And then related to that was CodeQL launches the ability to actually, I guess, PR fixes. Based on, though, the accuracy I've seen on a lot of these screenshots, I'd be a little bit skeptical on its ability to do that accurately. Have you played around with, have you taken a look at this public preview?
So, I'm sorry, I don't think I caught all of that. It's called CodeQL.
CodeQL, I think CodeQL is, I don't know where the line is drawn between that and GitHub Advanced Security. They're usually mentioned in the same sentence almost. I believe with CodeQL, you can upload like a file in a serif format, and then it goes into the GitHub Advanced Security dashboard that you have.
Got it. We aren't leveraging advanced security or really, yeah, like, yeah, I'm not leveraging a lot of those features yet. They were offering a promo for startups like 8 months ago. I never took advantage of that. Are you guys using that by chance?
Well, yeah, on public repos. And you know, where the difference between you and us is that your company, most everything is private, or you have a lot of public, but a lot of private too. For us, it's the other way around, mostly public and almost nothing private.
Yeah.
So, all right. And Kate's cleaner was just something that popped up. It's a Wait, are they actually, where was it? Yeah, it was,
Initial description here.
what was that?
The initial description here reminds me of like how we had to like defrag our disks
Yeah.
back in the day.
Yeah, or like all that software that came out, like to delete cookies on your
Yeah.
yeah, this is the latest and greatest way to delete the cookies on your Kubernetes cluster. Well, it somehow it identifies unused resources on the cluster. I'm not exactly sure how it does that. But yeah. If it works, that sounds easy and dangerous at the same time.
It would be nice to do that on CRDs. When I've had to uninstall operators, I've had to, it's a bit of work to figure out what I don't need. And then, yeah.
Yeah,
So,
like
yeah, I'm
find
curious.
open sources. Yeah, that makes sense.
Is this a SAS Cades cleaner? That looks like a full team.
Yeah, I was, this, sometimes it's interesting when, something that seems like it should just be a, a simple product, a company's formed behind it.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, my comment was more of the I feel like this should have been free, but
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. And there, yeah, maybe it's not, I assumed, I mean, I just assumed it was open source. It was via Reddit, I think I found it.
okay, cool. The P looks like it does
Good
some
open source.
persistent volume cleanup, which
Here's
might be
the,
nice.
what
I've
were you
seen
saying?
that. It looks like there I saw a mention of like PV cleanup, which might be a pretty good use case. I've definitely seen that in larger orgs where you just spend a ton of money on storage you don't need anymore.
Oh my God. Yeah, so many orphan volumes. Yeah, seen that too.
Maybe that'll be the enterprise feature.
Exactly. All right. And then the last one was just, I think there's a separate announcement somewhere. Puppet has decided to change their license in a very restrictive manner, and there will be a fork of Puppet apparently that will remain open source.
Oh, what was the license
Open
changed to?
Puppet project. Let's see, where's the original Puppet would like to miss. Puppet will here.
Yeah. Yeah,
Puppet will begin to ship any new binaries developed by our team to a private hardened control location, backed by EULA. So this is interesting. I think this relates to this trend that was it Adam Jacobs, system initiative guy, was talking about at KubeCon. One of the ways that companies are starting to monetize open source is they change it from license in, license out to the license out, meaning the binary is created, the way you distribute it is licensed different from the source code. So at least this keeps some of the open source ethos that the code remains under a permissive license, but the binaries are licensed under a commercial license of some kind. I'm only saying that because here it seems like binaries this way will be distributed that way.
cool. It also looks like they're letting contributors still access those private repos. That's pretty cool. So just give back and you can still access
Yeah.
it.
And it makes sense, right? Yeah, I think, I don't know how, what I don't understand is how enforceable it, like, what is stopping another organization from now creating, basically forking, adding the GitHub actions and distributing the binaries, right? Like, obviously, that's kind of an FU to the project that's trying to monetize and do those things, but I assume that
Yeah, I
is.
was thinking the same thing, but yeah.
Yeah. So it seems like just a nuisance and an annoyance, and I wonder what it actually does. in terms
One
of.
other open source model that I've seen, I'm not sure if it was covered in that KubeCon talk or not. I have not watched that yet, but it's basically a model where you have enterprise, similar, sounds like similar to what Puppet's doing here, where you have this enterprise binary with all these security fixes and everything first, and then eventually goes back to open source. I think, I think Calico, Cilium, those CNIs both do that. They have like an enter Cilium, I'm pretty confident, has like a, at least their sales rep told me they had an enterprise version and then the open source version.
All right. Well, that's all the announcements I had. I know you said, Venkat, you had a question.
So basically, I was trying to poke around with a couple things over these holidays, and I was curious to know, given you and your team have a lot more experience on this concept of Terraform providers, if I wanted to get started on making my own Terraform provider in 2024 or almost 2025, is there a tutorial or any thing that you'd follow to do it today? Would you use the official docs, or is there anything better?
So I'll ask a few more questions just to help guide you. And I didn't do this myself. It was more Matt on our team that did this. I believe there's a template provider offered by HashiCorp, and I don't know where it is.
I did find it in their docs somewhere, but
And it looks nicely archived. How convenient. And so I would not use that. Or here's the challenge is that I think there's three versions or so of the provider interface.
two is what I came across, which is
Oh,
really
two
confusing.
versions, okay. And I guess, yeah, and I guess what, and then the Terraform AWS provider went through a couple major changes as both as a result of them refactoring it, but also on a result of the provider interface changing. And depending on what you want to accomplish, the approach might change. In our case, what we wanted to do was do a few things related to AWS that the AWS provider didn't support. And we didn't want to try and go through promoted pushing that. They were never going to accept those changes. So I think the battery just died on my external camera here. One second. And in that case, what we did was we took the official AWS provider and we stripped out everything in it. So we had like a shell or a skeleton that did nothing, but had the same interface. So the same provider configuration would work. And then we made it so it could auto discover the provider config from the default AWS provider. So it almost felt like you were just using the AWS provider. But if you're just building a provider for like some APIs that you support or host, then that's very straightforward. Just start with the basic docs, I think, and go from there.
Got it. Cool. Are you guys
Past partners will
using?
have more input, and he's obviously off today.
No worries. Are you guys using the latest version? Do you happen to know of their like provider framework, or did you guys stick to
We
old?
did not do the upgrade yet, and part of the tech debt we have. So this is our utils, or we have two providers. We have our utils provider and we have our AWS utils provider. The AWS utils provider is the one that kind of borrowed the original AWS interface before the provider change. And then utils provider, I don't recall if it's been updated or not, but it would probably be easier.
Cool. Yeah, there. I know there's two different versions, and yeah, wasn't sure if I'd use the older one, if one was more tofu compatible over the other one, but yeah, the tofu docs actually point over to the Terraform docs, like the HashiCorp ones. So I assume they're supposed to be compatible, but you never know. So cool. That's all I had on my end.
Sergey, any questions from you? Well, I I think we will just call it quits early today. It is Christmas here in the US after all, so I'm gonna go back to the Christmas tree and hang out. Thanks everyone for thanks you too for joining, keeping me company here on Christmas. I didn't want to break the chain, so I'll be here again on New Year's next week. So if you manage to come, I'll see you then. With that said, thanks everyone. We'll be posting a recording of this session to our YouTube channel here in just a little bit. And if you want to book a call with Cloud Posse, go to cloudposse.com/meet, and you'll book a meeting with me directly, and we can see how we can help you out leveraging some of the tools at Cloud Posse. And with that said, here are some next actions. Subscribe to our YouTube channel if you haven't already. Join us on our Slack community. Go to slack.cloudposse.com. That's a free registration. And we also have the registration for office hours where you can join us live at cloudposse.com/office hours. All right. Have a great rest of your week and see you next week. Take care.